Podcast. Rock City.
What's up, everybody? Joe here from Podcast Rock City, and with me in the same room is Mr. D-Rock and Mr. Jody Havnot.
What's up, everybody?
Greetings, Kiss Army. What's up, man?
I did that way backwards, but because you're in the same room, it felt weird.
Yeah, we're at the old Whoobie. People might remember that's where we do all our Strange Ways shit back in the day.
Strange Ways! Back in the day.
Recorded all those covers here, all the old podcasts here. Yeah, yep. Same rooms, old school.
Yeah, absolutely. Pretty cool. So let's talk Kiss. Hey, there's a off the subject, but on the subject of Kiss, the podcasters that, you know, we're all friends with, like Chris Sinzak from the Decibel Geek, he's working out this like meeting of the minds of rock podcast, man, in Nashville, Tennessee.
Podcast summit, right?
Yeah, it's like a summit where we all get together and do our thing and have like our own like convention.
Yeah, it's like NAMM, but for podcasts.
Yeah, absolutely. So far, what they're trying to do is, if you guys are interested, they're raising money to pay for the venue through a fundraiser thing. I'll have the link on Podcast Rock City by the time you guys hear this. If you want, you can donate like $5. That's it. If you want to donate a few bucks, and basically what they're going to do is they're going to try to fly in. They're going to pay for the venue that way, and then they're going to try to fly in podcasters from around the country, even Canada. I think they want to try to. My understanding is they want to try to get in like the KST guys as well.
That'd be awesome.
I don't know how much of this is going to happen. We need your support, though. So go check out podcastrockcity.com, and there will be a page just with the link on it. You'll just, you know, fundraiser, podcast fundraiser, click on it, and you can do your thing. That's pretty much all the news. Gene's band played a pre-tour show. I heard the music was great. I heard the band was very good. If you get a chance, go online, just type in YouTube Gene's, thing, and it comes up.
I kind of don't want to see it because we're going to see it in April, and I kind of want to like try to stay away from it.
I don't want anything to be ruined, when we get there.
We'll see if I can make it till April without looking something up because I want to know so bad.
I doubt you will.
But I also want to be surprised, so we'll see what happens. We'll keep you posted out there, folks.
Yeah. So this week,
Podcast Rock City, topic of the week. Yes!
We decided to talk what?
Destroyer.
We just let D-Rock know about 10 minutes ago, so.
Yeah.
You've heard that album before, probably.
Jody and I dropped the ball. So Destroyer, because it's an album we have never talked about, in our opinionated way in depth.
Yeah,
it's like, how about this? Let's just get started. What do you guys think? What do you guys think about the whole theory that it is a concept record?
Well, I never thought about it until Podkiss turned me onto that like 5 years ago or whatever. And I could totally see it, but I would never have thought of that myself. You know what I mean? But once you hear like somebody's theory, I could totally buy into it because it does make sense. And Ezrin is kind of known for being, kind of theatrical.
Oh, yeah. He's done good and bad concept albums.
Yeah. So I think Destroyer could have like a loose concept. I mean, clearly there's some kind of cinematic shit going on at the beginning of Detroit Rock City, the crash at the end.
Right.
And then even towards the very end, the whole rock and roll party thing. I think Ken and their theories over at Podkiss were pretty much right on, dude, as far as it being a concept album.
Yeah, it feels like it tells a story,
But did you ever think of it before you heard someone's theory?
No.
Me either.
No.
No. I mean, that's the only one bad thing about theories, though, is if you have any kind of inkling of something that you could say that this is what it is, and somebody says that that's their theory, I mean, you know, if it's got that little bit of something that you, that sounds factual to that, you know, it may, any theory could be easily believed. Right. I'm not saying that he's wrong on that assumption, but, I mean, because I could definitely hear it, too, once you say that. But, I mean, when I got the album and just listened to it, I never would have thought that. I never would have put that together.
Yeah,
I just thought, oh, that was a cool intro and that was a cool ending, you know. But,
yeah,
you know, nothing more than that.
So when the record starts, you know, the first time you heard this, what did you think? I can tell you for me, it was creepy as hell. You know, it was, you know, with the you know, the whole thing, especially if you're listening to it, you know, when, how old was I when the record came out? Like seven, you know, six, 7 years old. I've got the headphones on. It was probably night and dark, and I'm hearing the, you know, it's creepy.
Yeah, I could see that a little bit. But for me, I mean, I didn't actually have the album until sometime in like 84 or some shit. You know what I mean? Because... Yeah. You know, you know how it was for me. I got into Kiss a little bit later and then went backwards, you know. Even though when I was a kid, it was interesting because really the first time I ever really saw Kiss was that 3-2-1 Contact, you know. And on there, they do King of the Nighttime World. So whenever I finally did get Destroyer, which was like probably the third or fourth album I ever had by Kiss, I automatically already knew that one. But you know what I'm saying. But for me, it didn't scare me. I was kind of thinking, you know, what the hell? Let's get to the song already. You know, it seems a little long to me in the beginning. It really does. I think they could have made that maybe like a 10-second intro, you know?
Right. Just the whole drug out scene.
I'd have to look at it, but it's probably, what, a minute and a half or something before the song starts?
Something like that.
It's probably at least that. You know, one of the things that every time I hear it, I always crack up because you can hear him pump the gas, you know, and you don't have to do that anymore in cars, you know.
Carburetor.
Yeah, they would pump the gas so they would get some in there and then crank it up. And, you know, people that are young would never know what that is now. They'll be like, what's he doing, you know? The story is about it's supposed to be about a guy in Detroit headed to the concert, but really, from my understanding, it was Nashville.
Oh, yeah?
I read that in the Kiss Alive Forever book.
Yeah?
I guess the Alive tour where somebody was on their way to a Kiss show and had an accident, and that's where they got the idea.
Okay,
the idea for the song was from a guy in Nashville.
Right.
It's pretty crazy. And I'm saying Nashville, but I just remember it being Tennessee. But so Nashville, Rock City. And it doesn't sound right.
Yeah.
Because Nashville can't be Rock City.
Thinking the same thing.
Nope. So we got to look at the time Alive finally put Kiss on the map, right?
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, they needed to go into the studio with this next record. And didn't Bill say, you know, either you could go and do the same thing and just kind of be a one-trick pony kind of thing, or you could go to the next level because of the success of Alive. So, of course, they wanted to do something bigger, right? Do you think that's why they decided to go with someone like Ezrin?
You know, some of the things that confuse me about this whole time, right, is you could go online and find, like, video of them playing in Germany, you know?
Yeah.
Where they're wearing the Alive costumes but doing Detroit Rock City.
Right. They demo that in 75, you know what I mean?
Yeah. But my whole thing isn't the solo in the song on the live version on that video the same as the one on the record? You know what I mean? I'm going to have to re-listen to it because they keep saying that Ezrin wrote the solo.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that is interesting if it was but they could have been in pre-production or even, you know, tracking at the time and just did some shows. I don't know. I'd have to look at the dates and see what's up.
Yeah. It's just, it kind of confuses me when I think about it. And I'd like to know the story behind that video.
Right.
If any of you guys out there know, you can send me a message at podcastrockcity1.
That's the number one.
@gmail.com. Thank you, D-Rock.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
Okay, so first song, Detroit Rock City.
An all-time classic, man.
One of my favorites. Classic.
It's like a staple of a Kiss show. You know, it's definitely in there. It could be, and they could play it first or last.
Yeah.
Anywhere it goes, if you go to see a Kiss show, it's going to fit in wherever they decide to put it in at.
Yeah, it's true, you know. And wherever you are, you're at Rock City, whether it be Atlanta or St. Louis.
Right.
Or even if you got a podcast, it's Rock City.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's
true. You want to hear what the old classic book says? I actually toted it all the way over here from my house to D-Rock's. This is the often referred to by us Robert Duncan classic Kiss 78 book, right?
Yep.
But it says, it has a whole chapter on Destroyer, obviously, and a lot about Ezrin, which is really cool. But let's see. It says, Detroit Rock City is in the classic Kiss tradition of sparse and pounding bass drums tunes and the lyrics as anarchic and partyized as anything the band has ever cut. I believe that.
Yeah, no, especially I agree. That album, but that album, that song and that album changed the game for them.
Yeah, because, I mean, it was definitely a big step up and a different punch in their sound, you know, especially coming off of, like, you know, Dress to Kill and all that other stuff. I mean, it had a total different rip-roaring sound to it and more in your face, you know.
Yeah, the first time they really had a structured dual lead. I mean, there was bits and pieces, like there's a bit in Black Diamond, but you know what I'm saying? The full-blown
dual thing. Dual like lead, me and you used to out. Rip out all the time in my family room.
Yeah, it's like Kiss finally. I think Ken, we had that episode with Ken a long time ago where they used to be rock and roll, and Destroyer's really the first time where they became just rock. You know what I'm saying? A rock band.
Yeah, right.
Instead of a rock and roll band. Big difference. But it's weird, though, because, you know, we look back on it and we think it's quite a bit heavier than a lot of the, you know, like a lot of the songs on Dress to Kill because of that.
Oh, yeah.
But at the time, the Kiss fans didn't think so at all. Like, there's a big backlash.
Right.
They didn't like it. They didn't think it was heavy. They didn't think it sounded like Kiss. They thought it was too glossy and then it sucked. You know what I mean? So it's kind of weird because looking back, I can't even imagine that sounded that much weaker than anything on Hotter Than Hell, you know?
But if you think about it, I think that album really also set in stone and defined their style of the way that they play, too.
Yeah, moving forward, you know, for sure.
Right.
After Destroyer, that was like marked a big change in the way Kiss sounded.
Yeah.
Because ever after that, they kind of sticked with that kind of a sound.
Right.
They did. Yeah, the next few albums especially.
They just kept with that style. You know, still changing it a little bit through the times, but kept that formula, you know, for their sound and the way that they write their songs and kept it
nice
because
and clean.
It works.
Nice and clean. Yeah. Well, you know, one of the things, though, is that the band might have decided that was the sound that worked for them, but the fans, like Jody said, they didn't bite until, you know, Beth came, and I know that's further down our list, but, you know, Beth was the reason why that album broke, you know, it had very little to do with how great it sounded to us or, you know, that they, like they said, you know, the album didn't sell that well, but then all of a sudden the DJs were flipping the record over because Beth was on the other side of Detroit Rock City, right?
Yeah.
They start playing that song and
people ate it up.
Because they were already in the studio because they were like doing a quick turnaround to Rock and Roll Over as a reaction to Destroyer. You know what I mean? Trying to strip it back before Beth was even a hit. You know? And then that changed everything for them because all of a sudden they're on the radio and they have all these housewives and shit are buying Destroyer.
Yeah, just because of Beth.
Yeah, and getting totally rattled when they can you imagine the housewife that only has ever heard Beth and then
getting wet in the panties and all of a sudden she hears everything else. It'd be like, what?
She puts on Detroit Rock City, it'd be like that lady on the movie Detroit Rock City. Just totally freaking out, you know.
Where's Karen Carpenter?
Right. If you thought you were getting an album full of Beth, yeah, not so much. I think it was a good move for Kiss because if they would have just like kind of did another, you know, studio record like Dress to Kill, they probably would have just kind of faded off and been that one-hit wonder with Alive, you know?
Yeah, because, yeah, they would have put that out, then they would have did Alive, which really just blew everybody away, and then all of a sudden go back to that. They're kind of like,
well, what the hell happened?
Yeah, because you couldn't just go back to a dry studio album again.
Right.
You needed something like Destroyer that was a little more, what's the word, like grandiose, you know?
Right, right.
Yeah, and it was very theatrical. You know, even though there's only a couple spots where there's like a hint of, you know, show involved. So you got the beginning of Detroit Rock City, the end leading into King of the Nighttime World, right?
Right.
Then you got God of Thunder, where there's the kids talking. It's creepy as hell.
Yeah, the little ghost echoing sounding kids.
Ezrin's kids. Yeah, now those were
Ezrin's kids. If you go online, you could find recordings where people slowed it down so you could understand what they're saying better.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really interesting.
You can hear them a lot clearer on that Resurrected mix, too.
They're really fucking loud
on it.
Yeah, yeah.
A little too loud, I think.
What do you guys think? I love King of the Nighttime World.
Dude, it's one of the best songs ever. Kim Fowley, co-write. So that song could have been a Runaways tune. But, yeah, Kiss did it justice. You've heard the original demo for it, I'm sure, haven't
you?
It's not so great, but Kiss owns that fucking song.
Yeah.
It's to me, it's one of in my top 10 of all time for Kiss.
Yeah.
I love everything about it. And, you know, it kind of, when I was a teenager, it really spoke to me, but it still does, which is weird, but I still kind of feel that way a lot of times, you know?
Yeah. Well, so the album starts off Detroit Rock City, then King of the Nighttime World. Then all of a sudden, now we get the emergence of the demon.
Gene's rumblings are beginning to happen.
Yeah. So even though, you know, there was the blood and the fire and Alive, it didn't capture the imagination like it did after this record came out. You know, because people, now they were a household name. So more people, you know, were seeing them.
Yeah.
You know, pictures and videos and the blood and the fire. And that, you know, they showed Gene on every occasion, you know?
Yeah, they definitely needed a strong, Gene mission statement for this album, because he was and still is really the face of Kiss. We all love Paul and everything, but
yeah.
Gene is the look. He's the one that 100 years from now, when people remember Kiss, they're going to remember that makeup.
Yeah, they're going to remember Gene Simmons.
They're going to remember the tongue. They're going to remember the blood. They're going to remember him flying, and they're going to remember the fire breathing. He does all the stunts. You know what I mean?
Talking about that, man, my little niece is in town with my cousins, you know, they came in to visit my dad, and we were talking about Kiss, and she could do the Gene Simmons tongue thing. I mean, this little girl's 12 years old and has, my God,
the longest fucking tongue I ever seen in my life.
She's like a lizard tongue, man. I mean,
like V. I've been watching V again lately.
Oh. Yeah, I mean, really? she could touch her nose, not like the tip of her nose, but like her nose with her eyes. Tongue and shit. So Maggie, love you, baby.
That's freaky.
Check this out in this Robert Duncan about God of Thunder. It's a nice little blurb. You ready for this one?
Yeah.
Says, what's all the fuss about Paul's song for Gene, God of Thunder? Again, discounting what might be increased professionalism in recording, the song is similar to any of a number of the Monsters' thumpomatic incantations. Nothing to lose to mention just one. So this guy's saying that Nothing to Lose was like just as much as a demon song, God of Thunder.
Yeah, I'll go with no.
Nah.
No, because I mean, that's both Paul and, you know, I mean.
Well, yeah, Paul kind of refined it down to the idea, which is perfect for Gene, you know, gave it legs. Because to me, Nothing to Lose, I mean, yeah, it's a Gene song, but it's not like a defining character song other than.
No.
The only thing that it tells you about Gene is he likes it in the back dough.
Yeah. I think,
instead of the demon in that song, he was the backdoor booty bandit.
No. There
are no demon songs before God of Thunder.
Exactly.
Right.
That's the way I feel. Totally.
Yeah. I don't know if anybody else out there agrees or disagrees with us, but...
By demon songs, you mean the character, not like...
The character, yeah. Not Gene. Yes, yeah, the character. The first, you know, demon song is God of Thunder.
Yeah. Do you think that there's like... Do all the character songs start with Destroyer? Is there like a Star Child character kind of thing? Or has that been ever present?
In other words, are you asking, do we think that that's where they started getting their own songs personalized to their own character?
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I would say yes, but I would definitely say Paul's songs lead more towards what his character was, the Star Child, the lover.
Yeah, like, come on, you know, love me and stuff. That's
Yeah. I put my fingers up in a quotation thing, like you could see that, you know? But you know, it still wasn't, to me at least, you know?
Yeah. It's just interesting that, like, around this time is when they were so huge, and then they introduced the characters, and they started using those coin, you know, those, like, the stories of Gene being hatched and all that shit, and Jendel. Yeah. So they were totally pushing into the whole...
Peter being part of a litter.
Yeah. It kind of started around this time, wouldn't you say? In 76, yeah, at some point.
Probably. I think they were starting to be more singled out, you know, at this time.
Yeah. I mean, even like when they, for the Land of Hype and Glory, that video that everybody's seen by now, you know, there's, you know, when somebody, you know, the guy interviewing him says, you know, so when you're, you know, when you're breathing the fire and spitting out the fake blood, you know, and Gene says, who says it's fake?
Right.
You know, that was, you know.
The whole I am evil incarnate.
Yeah.
So Gene's always kind of been that way, going all the way back.
Yeah.
Right.
Maybe he was trying, you know, back then, but it wasn't. You know, they laughed at him, you know. And Toby Fields, was that her name?
He's sitting next to him. Oh, Toby Fields, yeah.
Yeah, you know, she makes a comment about, yeah, wouldn't it be nice to know he was just a nice Jewish boy, and, you know, he says something, you know, which is him, you know, playing with her, you know.
Yeah.
But let's move on from here. Let's see. My whole thing is when it comes to Great Expectations, for me, I feel it's the weakest song on the record. I'm not a big fan of this song. I don't know. Yeah, I
don't care for it either.
I like it, but I agree. It's kind of the weakest track on the album. It's the most, yeah, like, maybe Gene should have maybe saved it for a solo record. You know what I'm saying?
It's very strange. You know, it's not that it's here. Here's the thing. I'm not sure that I want to say that it's bad. I just want to say that it's just, this is, you know, maybe this is like the beginning of Look How Awesome I Am from Gene Simmons, you know?
Well, it definitely didn't fit the album.
You know, you watch me playing guitar, you wish that, you know, blah, blah, my fingers, I'm so awesome, you know?
You want to hear what Duncan says?
Yeah.
It says, here's the rub. Great Expectations. It starts off all right with Gene beckoning lasciviously and suggesting that he knows of his fans' desires for his mouth and what it could do for them. But then two or three choruses in, these tubular bells begin to play along with the hook line melody. And what's that high-pitched noise? Yes, fans, that is the darkly rumored boys' choir itself singing right along. But in the end, it isn't merely as interesting counterpoint, an ironic twist, an enhancement to the patently lurid lyrics the Bat Lizard is spewing. This guy and his paragraphs. By the time you get to the end of him, you don't even know what he's talking about.
It's like he starts off with this point and then just kind of fades off somewhere else.
Joe and I did one of those premium ones where we both had this book out. It was like a book report, and it was just so absurd the way this guy writes, but I thought it might be funny.
I mean, you know, his book is classic, you know?
Totally.
But I can't read the words.
He uses a lot of big words, like gymnasium.
Yeah. Ooh, that's a all big right, one.
Let's see. Let's move on. Flaming Youth. I love this song.
Yeah. Great song. I love it.
this song, I would say, is a Paul character.
Totally.
Song. You know, I just remember being with my buddy Bob and my buddy Doug, and we were all like so hysterical listening to the, and we were listening to this record. We were in high school. We've listened to it 1,000 times before this, but I just remember somebody going, "Hey, wait a minute. How come I never noticed the Calliope music in the background?" You know,
I think it sounds awesome.
I don't know if I would label that a Paul song. I mean, as to just his character. I think it's just them writing a song representing, you know, them being young, them being the hottest thing right now, you know, and oh, I mean, I don't think I would, I mean, me personally, I wouldn't label that as just a Paul, you know, song.
Oh, no, yeah, I think it's more of a teen angst.
Yeah, it's like a teenage anthem, thing. Dude.
Right.
Anthem. Yeah, I think it has less to do with the band and more to do with, you know, when you read the lyrics, you know, it's all about kids against parents.
Yeah. Parents think I'm crazy. Hate the things I do.
Right. But it's still, you know, it's like them though. Still, you know, they're young, they're rebellious because they were rebelling against everything that was traditional rock and roll. Yeah. You know, sure. And what people expected to hear back then. You know.
True. I think it's one of the greatest ones on the album, though. I think it's super cool that it's finally getting its due 40 years later. You know?
Right, especially with them putting it in their lineup, you know, for their live concerts.
Right, that's what I'm saying. It's like finally being recognized as the great song that I've always known it was. Right. You know what I mean?
Right, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that was just the same with Hide Your Heart. You know, when we heard them play it live, I mean, I was about ready to crap my pants in my wheelchair, man. I was like,
I thought I smelled all something, right. Dude.
All right, how about Sweet Pain?
I love it.
It's a good song.
It is. It's definitely not one of Gene's worst, that's for sure.
It's definitely better than Great Expectations.
Right.
I always dug it. What do you guys think about the different... Because this one has Dick Wagner, the solo you've heard your whole life, right?
Right, yeah. Then you know, then you listen to the...
On the Resurrected, you can hear the Ace's solo, and it's just like,
Thank God for Dick Wagner.
I think Ace could have came up with something just as cool if given time, you know? But apparently they didn't want to wait, so... Card games can be a bitch.
Yeah, that's the problem, you know? We have Dick Wagner's solo instead of Ace's solo because of Ace.
Yeah.
You know?
But I like what Dick did. You know, I've grown up with it my whole life, so like we were talking about, once you hear the other one, it just doesn't fit. You want to hear the one you're used to, you know.
Yeah.
But I think the song's pretty cool. I think it threw people to have those kind of you know, the background vocal chicks at the end, kind of Stonesy.
Yeah, yeah. And that was on purpose.
Yeah, I think it's cool. I know when I was a kid, I didn't really understand what the song was really about. You know what I mean? Like, it's pretty S&M when you look at it.
Yeah.
When
you're a young kid.
When you sit back and you actually listen to the lyrics and think about it, you know, yeah.
But yeah, when I was a kid, I didn't really get it.
A lot of Kiss stuff you don't get until you get older and you start going, oh.
Yeah.
You know, until you've at least lived a little bit of what they're talking about.
Right. Even simple things like Love Gun. I never thought of that as a Dick song until I was much, much older. Yeah. Or, you know, Nothing to Lose. Never even considered that as a kid, what it was really about.
Yeah. Yeah. It's true.
Podcast Rock City. Yeah! Is it too loud or too old?
Let's see. Okay, so the next song is Kiss's second attempt at an anthem, Shout It Out Loud.
Love that song. Tired of the song, but man, what a great one.
Yeah, it's still a great one. I mean, if I had a choice to put it on a CD to listen to in the car or something, even though I've heard it 10 million times, I'd still put it out there because it's still a great jam, you know?
Oh, yeah.
It's
a good one, man. What do you think about it, Joe?
I like it very much. I like, you know, it's another, I like that that Paul and Gene sing it back and forth, you know? And
yeah, I'm a big fan of that.
Yeah, I really, I like that kind of thing.
I love the piano descending with the bass in the chorus. It just sounds right. really nice. I love this song. I know most people are sick of it, but it's still really great. It's great. You know, it's well written, killer production. I mean, I can't imagine that it wasn't a bigger hit. You know, it should have been like a number one hit, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely...
And why wouldn't that... What was the first single? Detroit Rock City?
I think so, yeah.
Cut up, and the single of that's brutal, man. It's cut up all crazy. The lead is in half and shit. But Shout It Out Loud, it seems like a no-brainer. I think it actually was the... I think they actually did pre-release Shout It Out Loud as a single, if I'm not mistaken.
Especially because it was showing that they both can have solo parts separate from each other, you know, in the same song and still make it work really well.
Yeah, you get the best of both worlds, man, Gene and Paul, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which people love, you know?
Plus a huge chorus, which is what Kiss was famous for from Rock and Roll All Night, you know?
Yeah.
It should have been a mega hit.
I think Shout It Out Loud is a little more complex.
Definitely. It's got a solo.
Yeah, that's true, too. And it's a good one, too.
Yeah, a really good one.
Yeah.
I mean, just to say, along with all the songs on there, I mean, I think on this album, every song was well choreographed, well written, well piece of day. I mean, every song on there pretty much had a lot of dynamic, you know, to them.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Let's face
you know,
it,
how much
dude.
You, Ezrin, you know?
Yeah, if you got to face it, man, this is a masterpiece by Kiss.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and a lot of people might be tired of it, but I think if you really look at it as an album, it's one of the strongest ones they've ever done.
If you stack it album compared to album, you know, yeah, most definitely.
I mean, there's nothing you really have to skip if you put it on. I mean, you might skip Beth.
Yeah, because everybody's sick of hearing that now.
I actually love Beth, but yeah, it's not one that you...
I do, but it's just like one of those ones you've heard it a million times.
You know, this is the song that broke the album, but I would also say signed the, you know, death warrant to Peter Criss.
Big time. This is where it all went wrong for Peter Criss.
Yeah,
Peter all of a sudden, you know,
got
decided...
his big head.
Yeah, hey, look at this. You know, of course, I'm sure there were people also helping it along. Oh, Peter, you just wrote the best, you know, this blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and even though Peter, you know, inside his head, he knew he didn't write it.
He definitely took a lot of credit for it, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, if you know, we weren't there. So if you believe everything that's written about the song, you know, he came in with a melody or whatever and an idea. And
well, I've heard the original, like, what was it on that? Was it a Chelsea one or
Chelsea
was it Lips?
Song, I think.
It might have been Lips. I can't fucking remember, but I've heard it. And it's pretty different, man. You could tell Bob Ezrin really, really fleshed it out, you know, and made it the song that everybody recognizes today. Because otherwise, I don't think it would have been such a hit. I really don't. Because it is Ezrin's arrangement that makes it so beautiful. You know what I'm saying? Like,
right. So, like, melodic and classical sounding, but yet rocking.
Like, I'm not often in the mood for that song, but if I hear it at the right time, it hits me in this weird spot. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
It's like nostalgia meets, like, I don't even know. But it does something to me every once in a while. It's just, it's beautiful, man.
It really is a beautiful song, you know, but it's just one of those things where every once in a while, you know, you could be in the right place and actually hear it, like at the grocery store.
Yeah.
You know? And when you hear it, you stop and go, oh, man, it's Beth.
I'll tell you this much, man. I will tell you this much. 96, St. Louis reunion. Peter Criss doing Beth. I'm not gonna front, dude. I had fucking tears welling up. I really did, dude.
Jody's all mushy.
No, I agree, man.
It was amazing,
you know,
though, dude.
It's amazing because you know you in your life you thought you'd never see that.
Exactly, and right. Then there he was, you know, doing Beth, like his signature song. So yeah, right. Dude, it has its merits and its moments. But it's not one that I'm like, oh, you got to hear Beth all the time. Nah. So every once in a while, it comes up on an old playlist or something on the iPod, and I'll just let it go, you know? But a lot of times, I skip it.
Just because of my Peter Criss voice when I sing certain things, I get chicks asking me to do that song all the time.
Yeah. I can't hear it. Well, give us a little piece of it. Give me a piece.
No.
Come on, D-Rock.
No.
One little piece.
No.
Come on, dude.
No.
Don't let the fans down, bro.
Sorry.
All right, last song on the list. Do You Love Me?
Yes.
I like this song.
I love this song. It's one of my all-time favorites. Top 10.
Yeah. You know, we recently talked about, you know, the redone version that Ezrin did with the original cover, and I was talking about how you know, you can really hear the kick drum. They really pushed it out front, you know. Time.
And the vocal harmonies.
Sorry.
D-Rock just died in the background.
Yep. I just coughed up a lung.
We don't want that.
Nope. Half of that shit's on my foot right now.
Yeah, sorry. Sorry about your chucks, man.
Yep.
Now but, they're D-Rocks.
Yeah, that's true. But Do You Love Me, man? Really good song. Paul wrote it talking about, you know, it was really personal to him, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Especially when you, after you're, you know, reading his book and knowing how he was always kind of in search of love, you know?
Yeah.
You know, but always thinking that people were just wanting to be with him because he was famous, you know, and everything else. It's like, yeah, okay, I know you're here, you're with me, da-da-da, but do you really love me, or do you just love my money and my fame, you know, right, and everything else?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's like a nice point of view from a brand new rock star, you know?
Yeah, true.
It's one of the best Kiss songs ever, dude. I think that I really do, and I love the middle eight. It's just everything about it's like absolutely perfect. Love the bells at the end. Paul sounds great.
That was a nice touch.
It's another piece of evidence that you don't have to write the most busy, like the busiest song, or, you know, because there's enough thought into this song that it's a really good song. The lyrics tell a story, but, you know, it's no Detroit Rock City, you know, because, you know, when you listen to Detroit Rock City, there's so much more thought put into that.
The lyrics are more straightforward. You know, it's not like, oh, no, I think he was talking about this, or no, he was talking about this. I mean, it's really just straightforward. You understand everything that he's trying to portray, you know, in those lyrics.
Very direct.
Yeah. So after that is the rock and roll party thing. I remember being like, all right, now we're into the devil worship shit. All right. Yeah. All
right. Sitting in your room like fucking the rag man.
You know, you didn't know it was coming because if I remember correctly, it doesn't say anything about it on the record.
Not on the actual record, no. Now they gave it a name and all that.
Yeah, it's called Rock and Roll Party. But it wasn't, you know, there wasn't anything before. It just kind of, you know, came, and there it was. And you went, whoa, what's this? You know? Yeah.
And then, like, the whole theory of the concept record, this is, like, when he's at the gates of heaven and all that stuff, right?
Yeah.
See, I don't know.
Rock and Roll Party.
I don't know. I think if I would have made this record, I would not have included that bit. I mean, I don't know. I just wouldn't have used it. I don't see why they did. Do you? I mean, would you have put it on there if you were
as... Well, I mean, if you're thinking about it as if it really was a concept album. Yeah,
maybe they needed something.
You got the beginning on the way to the concert. Then that's supposed to be like the middle where they're actually at the concert.
Yeah.
You know, having the party, you know, during the concert. And then, of course, the end.
So they should have made a big like crash sound at the end of Do You Love Me Again or something. Maybe.
I don't know.
Maybe, yeah. They could have put the crash. Well, no. You know what? Hey, why change it?
I'm just saying, for me, if I was producing the record, I would have just ended it with a longer fade of Do You Love Me where those bells could just keep on ringing out.
Right, yeah. Just pull the fade out on that.
A big, slow one, you know, right. Just epic.
Yeah. Once you wanting me more. And you are known for.
I am a fan of a big, long fade on something that's like...
That's classic.
Yeah, you know, those bells and everything.
Yeah, so that's the end of that record. I give it 4 stars. I think everybody gives it 4 stars out of 4, don't you?
Yeah, I
give it 4 out of 4? Yeah.
I give it like a, out of 10, probably like a 9.5.
Yeah, yeah. I agree with that.
Yeah.
But I mean, the art, yeah, everything from the art to everything about it, it really was like a changing of the guard for Kiss. It was the first time they were like on the album cover as, you know, superheroes.
Right, yeah.
The whole thing was just epic.
Yeah. Ken Kelly did great artwork. It's just one of those records that I can remember being like a teenager. I used to go over to this dude's house who played guitar and usually had a joint or something. But, you know, I was a teenager, so I'd go over there mostly because he was a guitar player, but we'd sit around, fuck around with guitars, and he had a stack of records, and he had a couple kids that were probably like 5-6 years old, right? And I was just sitting over there one day noodling around on this guitar, and those kids were going through the albums, and they pull out Destroyer, and without knowing anything about Kiss, they're going, I like this one. He's the one who breathes fire, and this one, he's from the jungle, and all this kind of shit. It's like, without even ever having any previous knowledge, these kids had already painted the whole Kiss story just by looking at Ken Kelly's painting. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
I think that's super cool. And it spoke to me even back then that Kiss really is timeless, because they're so cool that every generation of kids is going to look at that and go, wow, that's fucking cool.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, and
yeah,
they'll be able to live it forever that way.
Plus, I loved the whole comic book feel, but yet it was a realistic, like, you know, painting of them, you know, because I mean, he made them look, all of them look like they were all ripped out, you know, yeah, like complete superhero, you know, larger than life.
Yeah.
You know.
So what did you guys think when you first got the album and you take out that sleeve and it's got the whole Kiss Army badge?
I loved it. I thought that was cool as hell. I wish I still had that jean jacket, because I'd take that patch off and put it on my leather jacket now.
Yeah. But I mean, I think, do you guys feel it's weird that Kiss always goes back to, like, you know, this is going to be the next Destroyer every album, you know?
They do, you know, that's because that's what they want, you know? Yeah,
I think they're trying to do that, and they want people to feel that way, you know?
I don't personally need a new Destroyer. I like the old one. I just want a good, solid Kiss record.
I think it's classic. It should stay that way. Don't try to reproduce it. You know, keep going. You know, and show us, you know, how your style has changed and progressed over the years. Don't try to reproduce it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think they just say that because that was the one that was, like, super successful.
Kind of like how Metallica always refers back to Master, right? You know?
Yeah.
They're trying to get back to that sound. They'll never get it. Yeah.
Totally.
Podcast Rock City.
I want to remind you guys to tell you a little more. The expo that we were talking about is called the Nashville Rock and Pod Expo, Saturday, August 26, 2017, at Millennium Hall in Nashville, Tennessee. I will tell you that you could go to GoFundMe and look that up. GoFundMe. Our goal right now is $1,500 to pay for the place to have it, and we're already over halfway there. And I think they just started it today.
And plus, if you can, drive out there or fly out there and meet us.
Yeah. So let me ask you this. Yeah. How many of our buddies have already, like, signed on to go to be there? Matt Porter going to be there?
Well, Matt, I believe, is coming. It says...
Then I'm going.
All right. I'll tell you what it says. Everything is tentative for now, but attendees of this event will quite possibly get to meet the hosts and have the opportunity to witness episodes recorded live by some of the following podcasts. Decibel Geek, Pods and Sods, Podkissed, The Rock and Roll Geek Show, Rock Solid, Talking Metal, Rock and Metal Combat, The Classic Metal Show, The Double Stop, The Hustle, Rock and or Roll, Kistery Science Theater, The Kiss Room, Kiss FAQ. There's just so many. We're the last one.
Nice.
Podcast Rock City. And of course, maybe,
they save the best for last.
Well, yeah.
You know, I'm just joking, guys. Don't take no offense to that. I was just making a joke.
they know. But yeah, so this sounds amazing. I think it would be totally great. Well, first of all, to sit with you guys and do a show is would be, you know, I might quit after that. So maybe we don't go. No.
You know, this seems like it's going to feel like it's going to be like our own little personal Comic-Con. Yeah. You know, where fans can come and meet all of us all in one place, you know, and get to talk to, you know, each different podcast, you know, and all their members, you know.
Be super cool.
Yeah. And like I said, you know, people are donating money. You know, there's $5 donations, there's $100 donations, there's $20 donations, $50 donations. You guys are great, man. You know, and
we love it. We love you all.
Yeah, any of this is good. You know, it'll be. And some people are anonymous, and some people, you know. It says their names, and if you want to be anonymous, that's fine. If you put your name, you know, it's just as good. You're awesome. We
appreciate it either way, you know.
Yeah, I meet a bunch of people. That'd be cool.
Yeah, that
I'm gonna make sure
cool.
I bring a couple Sharpies.
You plan on signing some titties and shit, do you? Right?
Fuck yeah, man.
Hell yeah. Oh yeah. All right, what's this? Oh my god, we lost it. What's the Sweet 16?
Podcast Rock City Sweet 16.
All right, Sweet 16. Ah, yes, Sweet 16.
What are we waiting for?
Let's stop this pussyfooting around.
Oh yeah.
Right. Ah,
Sweet 16. All right, listen.
This time it's the Sweet 16 of the Ezrin Productions. So it kind of ties in with Destroyer a little bit, obviously.
All right.
So as you know, Ezrin produced Destroyer, The Elder, Revenge, you know. So I took the best songs off of each and spat them into the thing, spit them out. I didn't spit them in. There you go. So yeah, you know how it works. I think everyone listens probably heard us do these before. So let's just get right into it, huh?
Yep.
Round one, we got God of Thunder versus Take It Off.
I'm going to have to go with Take It Off.
Really?
That's what?
I'm going God of Thunder.
Me too.
No offense. I love that song, Take It Off. I think it's a great Paul song, you know?
But you can't compete with God of Thunder.
I had to throw out the first, you know, unlikable answer.
I'm going to delete that comment.
Yeah, I actually did that on purpose. Obviously, I would pick, you know.
All right, don't do that again. All right, move forward.
All right, Dark Light versus King of the Nighttime World.
Ouch! That's a tough one.
That's too easy as far as I'm concerned.
I'm going with King of the Nighttime World.
Joe?
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, that one's too obvious. Dark Light's great, but come on. Dark King Light's of Nighttime great. World.
Yeah.
That's one of the best ever.
Still tougher than the other last two.
Yeah. What about The Oath versus Paralyzed?
I'll go with The Oath.
Yeah, I agree with The Oath.
Yeah, easily. Paralyzed is good, but The Oath.
Oath beats it, though.
All right. Well, how about Thou Shalt Not versus Detroit Rock City?
Detroit.
Yeah, Detroit Rock City.
Too obvious again. Some of these just aren't fair. Anything off of Revenge can't stack up against anything
against
off of
Detroit.
Destroyer.
Yeah.
Really. I don't think. We'll find out in this next round because we've got Domino versus Do You Love Me.
I'm going with Do You Love Me just because.
Yeah,
I agree.
I mean,
it's better.
Hell yeah, it's way better. Again, Revenge versus Destroyer. Destroyer all
obvious
day.
Obvious choice.
All right, well, how about I versus Flaming Youth?
I'm going Flaming Youth.
See, this list is turning out to be too obvious, isn't it?
Right now.
Yeah, so far. How about Only You versus Shout It Out Loud?
Oh.
I'm going with Shout It Out Loud.
Oh man, I really love Only You. I'm gonna go with Only You.
Hmm. I actually love that one too, but I still feel like Shout It Out Loud's probably a stronger song.
All right.
More, definitely a lot more catchy. And I'm in a destroyer mode, so yeah, Shout It Out Loud, we'll take that one. All right, well, this one may not be as obvious. How about A World Without Heroes versus Unholy?
Well, obviously, you know what my answer is to that one. I'm going with Unholy.
Yeah. Joe?
Yeah, I'm going Unholy.
All right. Yeah, I would too, man. I mean, Unholy, that's like two ends of the spectrum for Gene. You got, you know.
Right.
Right, yeah.
Crying little baby demon versus the evil Unholy, you know.
You know, yeah. Black leather, bearded, you know, roll your head, eyes in the back of your head, demon.
Yeah. All right, well, this one, now we're going to round two then. So this one's a little bit tougher. God of Thunder versus King of the Nighttime World.
Whoa, I would say King of the Nighttime World.
I agree.
Yeah, easily.
Nice.
King of the Nighttime World, though, dude. Damn, that's such a great one. How about The Oath versus Detroit Rock City?
Ooh.
I'm going to say The Oath.
I'll go Detroit Rock City.
Oh shit, D-Rock's gotta break the tie.
Man, I don't know, because I mean The Oath is really a dynamic song. You know, but I gotta go with Detroit.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
Well, well, well. Do You Love Me versus Flaming Youth?
I'm going with Flaming Youth.
I am too.
Yeah, yeah.
It sounded so disappointed on that one. Jody was just giving me the eye. He's like, which one are you picking?
Try to influence him by the eyes and shit. Didn't work.
The Jedi mind tricks cannot work on me.
Move along. Alright, so Shout It Out Loud versus Unholy.
That's tough.
Not for me, it ain't. Isn't.
You know, I'm actually going to go against my gut instinct, and I'm actually going to go with Shout It Out Loud.
Really?
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, I go Unholy.
Yeah?
For once, I don't pick my favorite song, and he does.
I'll pick Unholy. Unholy will take it.
Bastards.
It's your favorite song. It's still Juan, dude.
Yeah, I know, but still.
I think that...
I mean, the only reason I went Shout It Out Loud is because it's just... It's more of a familiar song, you know, for everybody, more than the Revenge album was, you know?
Yeah.
All right, so we're moving into the third round here. King of the Nighttime World versus Detroit Rock City.
I'm going to go with Detroit Rock City.
D-Rock?
I'm going to have to agree with that. Jody's just shaking his head.
God, man.
Normally, Jody's going, man, what's wrong with you guys?
I forget that you're not in the room, Joe, because now D-Rock could just read my disdain.
I could just see the disappointment on the look on his face.
All right. Well, let's see. Where were we? Flaming Youth or Unholy?
Oh,
God damn.
I'm going Unholy.
As much as I love Unholy, man, I'm still going with Flaming Youth.
I pick Flaming Youth over Unholy all day long. So that means in the final round, we got DRC, Detroit Rock City versus Flaming Youth.
Mm.
Both songs from Destroyer in the final two.
I go with Detroit Rock City.
D-Rock.
I'm going to have to go with Detroit.
Yeah, I could see it.
Well, there you have it. Detroit Rock City takes it.
Yep. That's pretty interesting. I mean, it does make sense if you think about Ezrin production. Which one comes to mind right off the bat? A lot of times it's Detroit Rock City. They always kind of like end up with the obvious answer at the end somehow.
It does happen a lot.
Yeah, it's weird.
But it's interesting to see the chain of progression, though, of what you're actually stacking it up against. You know, it's like even though we hear that one song, you know, come into the list and we automatically are thinking, oh, that one's going to win it. And it 9 out of 10 times it does. But it's also interesting to see how the rest of the songs are going to chart, you know, compared to coming up to,
right,
you know, going up against that last one, which one of them is actually going to end up being.
What I like to do is find out, like, suppose the little randomizer spit out a different order of these same 16 songs. Would it still come out Detroit Rock City?
I don't know. I don't think I have the randomizer voice to do it again.
Well, thank you guys for listening this week. We really appreciate it. That, you know, we listen, you know, when you listen every week, we appreciate it. But thank you guys so much for listening to us on your drive or while you're sitting at home or in school or whatever. We appreciate it every week. I've said appreciate a lot. So
we appreciate it.
Absolutely. Jody, do you have anything to add?
I'd say we appreciate you listening so much. Thanks. Really, we do, though. Seriously. Thank you.
We do. D-Rock?
I'm glad that everybody is listening and pay attention to our show and keep tuning in.
And you know what I'm going to say? We love listening to podcasts, KISS podcasts, music podcasts, and you are going to hear the commercials from our favorite ones at the end of the show. In 3, 2, 1,
peace.
You wanted the best, you got the best. And if you want the hottest show on Monco Radio, join us in the KISS Room. The KISS Room is a monthly radio broadcast celebrating the hottest band in the world. KISS! It's your place for all things KISS and some... For broadcast dates and all information, go to thekissroom.com. The KISS Room broadcasts live and worldwide on Monco Radio, where music and minds meet.
Greetings from Jandel Kiss Army. Strange Ways Podcast is having a rock and roll party and you are invited. Tune in and hang out with your Kiss Army bros where they celebrate and discuss the gods of thunder. Yes! You can find the Earth versions on Podomatic, iTunes, Facebook, and Stitcher. Just Google us.
Yes.
Thanks for listening, and remember to eat it like a piece of cake.
Kistery Science Theater. The most civilized.
Yeah. Come on.
Respectful.
Just imagine G with like a washed up bass. Boom, 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 boom.
And serious.
No, wait. Excuse me, Bob. You're going to come over and do my album.
KISS Podcast on the web. Kistery Science Theater. We bust balls because we can.
All right, KISS Army. Since 2007, you've been getting podcast, the KISS audio fanzine for your ears.
That's right, it's your podcast. Every month, the podcast crew, along with the KISS Room, brings you KISS talk like no one else, whether it be roundtables, interviews with the band past and present, analysis, and great KISS fun.
Hi, this is Dave Sprelli, and you're listening to podcast.
Hi, this is Bruce Kulick, and you're listening to Podkist.
The Podkist, the KISS audio fanzine for your ears.
Hey, everybody, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Chris.
And we're from the Decibel Geek Podcast, and if you love this...
then you'll love us.
That's right. Brand new episode every single Monday. You can find us on iTunes and at decibelgeek.com. And the best thing is, it's rock and roll, and it's always free.
Sitting around with time to kill.
Ladies and gentlemen, do you like metal, punk rock, hardcore, and cracking jokes about being a fan? Yes? Then check out Music the Lifeblood, the podcast that goes deep into the core of being a fan with new music from badass bands, band and genre discussions, along with in-depth interviews from some of punk, metal, and hardcore's titans. Find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Podomatic, Tumblr, and Facebook. Something old, something new. What are you listening to?
Music, the lifeblood. Baby, you know it's only you and me. And as far as I'm concerned, that's all I need. A generation behind. We're going nowhere, and that's just fine.
He's on that syrup.
Sucking back on a little bit of that cough syrup, are you?
Here, listen.
Very next day, I went on the Podkiss Facebook page, and they were
bleeding. Yeah, think about this.
Just I'd hate to hear what I sound like.
There's Zero.
So loose and they sound like such ass. You tell me.
Where the hell is D-Rock?
I don't know, dude.
You guys sound so fucking stoned.
Like Shandy, but I think in a way it sounds a lot like the Bee Gees.
Holy shit, D-Rock sounds like that.
I sound more like I'm drunk than I'm stoned.
It reminds me of something that you would couple skate at a skating rink.
I sound like a retarded version of Bobcat Goldthwait.
Yeah, you do.
It's still a great song.
All right. All right. That's enough.
I'm afraid I've given you all the time I can spare at the moment, my dear. You'll have to come back. Thank you, and goodbye.